Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! On a Wednesday, we tag team it as Doug is out today. So glad to have you with us here on Fox Sports Radio as today's Doug Gottlieb Show is brought to you by Discover Card. We'd treat you like you'd treat you. What is happening on this hump day, one Ephraim Salam?
Doug is just getting lazy, man. I mean, all of these days. Often,
Doug is out for the Jewish holiday today.
I mean, Doug, come on, man. What's good? Please take as much time as you want. I appreciate the opportunity to fill in for him. And just for those who are listening and don't know Doug and I's relationship, it's quite solid.
It is very
That's
solid.
That's my guy.
Yep. You guys have known each other for a while. You'll even pop in on a show here and there and chat not only through one segment but maybe two and maybe stay for the hour. It's happened before.
And the crazy thing is, of course, I played football professionally for a long time, but Doug and I really enjoy talking basketball. Like, he's a basketball guy, I'm a basketball guy. We both played in college, and so I love that opportunity to really sit and talk with a real basketball guy.
Well, we'll talk some basketball actually on this show. Yes.
Nice.
Because something happened last night that just really ticked me off. Really, really ticked me off. But Doug is out today, as we mentioned, for the Jewish holiday. So you've got me and Ephraim Salam. I'm Dan Beyer. Get Ephraim on Twitter at Ephraim Salam. I'm at Dan Beyer on Fox. Doug will be back tomorrow. Sam Darnold will be back in the Jets lineup in week 6. But he really isn't the quarterback that we even care about in this game. Yeah, it's nice for the Jets to get their starting quarterback back. But once again, it's all about Dak. And Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys, the good news... Doug brought this up yesterday, good news, bad news situation. The good news of the Dallas Cowboys is that they're tied for first in the NFC East. The bad news is they're 3-2 on the season coming off to a home loss to the Green Bay Packers. And we're not only talking about this season, Ephraim, we are looking ahead. And week in and week out, there seems to be a referendum on what the Dallas Cowboys should do with Dak Prescott. And before we dive in, I do want you to listen to some comments from Cowboys owner Jerry Jones, who talked about those said 17 or 16 referendums.
Narrative about his financial as opposed to how he's playing is frankly laughable. It is not impacting that with me at all. But I do see Dak showing the ability to handle adversity and basically go out and make the kind of plays that can win important games for the Cowboys in the future. I've seen guys' knees buckle when they get in that spot. Dak's don't.
Jerry Jones on 105.3 The Fan doing his weekly hit, but basically saying, hey, this isn't going to be a week-to-week thing on whether Dak should get a contract or Dak shouldn't get a new long-term contract from the Dallas Cowboys. But here we are, Ephraim, coming off of a week where the Cowboys had their run game slowed by Green Bay, and through the air, Dak Prescott threw 3 interceptions. Now you begin to wonder, in the biggest games and the opportunities where Dallas has an opportunity to do something special, Dak Prescott hasn't necessarily been there, which I think would put into question to many Cowboy fans, if we want to reach the top and go to the Super Bowl, is Dak Prescott our guy?
Well, when you look at this and you look at the landscape of the league, right? It's a quarterback league. We all know that. So the argument for them not to pay Dak Prescott in terms of he's not the guy to take you to the next level, right? What about the last quarterback that was in Dallas? Was Tony Romo the guy to take you to the next level? Because according to Jerry Jones, he was. Remember those statements about him? Tony Romo's going to take us to the promised land. He's our guy. He's our quarterback. You know, all of these things that made Tony Romo special, right? He was undrafted, he came into the league, played better than expected, all this, and they rewarded him. They rewarded him, and they paid him what the market value at the time was for a quarterback. So when you get the next quarterback, right, the reason Dak Prescott is where he is today is Tony Romo gets hurt, he gets thrust into position. They go on to takes advantage of it. He has a phenomenal year. They go into the playoffs, so on and so forth. So when it comes to paying Dak Prescott what the market bears for a quarterback, he's your starting quarterback, right? Unless you want to roll the dice, right? If you look around the league, there's a lot of teams that would love to have a Dak Prescott right now, right? I'm pretty sure that the Pittsburgh Steelers would like to have a Dak Prescott.
Chicago Bears.
Chicago Bears. Even the Jacksonville Jaguars, as wild as the mustache man and Minshew is playing. So when you look at Dak's first few years in the league and what he's been able to do, right? So this is his fourth year. And he's at right around 68, an average of 66-67% completion rate. He's 78 touchdowns, 31 interceptions, passing rating of right around 97 in this short time. What else do you expect? Right? Right. So when you talk about value, we're going to strip it down, and I get we got a bunch of numbers against certain type of defenses and whatnot, mm-hmm. but when you strip it down in a quarterback's league, what is really happening? Now, I want to break that last game down they played against Green Bay, too, to support Dak.
Well, let's go there, because that's the question, because we have numbers to say that Dak Prescott is a great quarterback playing bad defenses. When you play good to great defenses, mm-hmm. the numbers aren't there. These are Dak's numbers against top 16 defenses. Overall record, 8-14. 223 passing yards per game. Has turned the ball over 36 times compared to producing 25 touchdowns in those 22 games. Against defenses outside of the top 16, so 17 and below, Dak is 27-4 in his career and has thrown for 53 touchdowns and 10 interceptions. Stark contrast for playing against decent defenses. And this past weekend, the Cowboys faced a pretty decent defense in Green Bay, which forced three more Dak Prescott interceptions.
So we were on the air during that game.
Yes.
What was the first thing and really the main thing? And you were there, so I'll let you answer for me, and then I'll elaborate on what was the thing I was saying from the jump.
That Dak Prescott was not getting any help from Tyron Smith's replacement, Corey Fleming.
We sat here together, and once I pointed it out, you made a special note to really look at it. Every play. What was happening every play?
Dak Prescott was either getting hit or pressured or having to get rid of the ball because of pressure from Za'Darius Smith or other Packers defenders.
He had a career day, right? Za'Darius Smith had a career day. When you and the Dallas Cowboys weren't doing anything to help this young man, right? When you get thrust in a position, especially at left tackle, I know, I was there, played there a long time in this league. I know what that island feels like. If you are a backup in this league and you come in, there are no great backup left tackles, or you'd be starting. That's just the bottom line. And so going into the game plan, you know that. So you have to plan accordingly. They did not. They left this young man out on an island with a hellacious pass rushing defense, and everybody was now jumping on Dak Prescott because missing targets, interceptions. When you're constantly harassed, every play, we were watching back-to-back-to-back plays where the line was breaking down. And yeah, the rest of the line, pretty solid, right? So what you have to do is you have to slide that way. You have to put Jason Witten in the backfield, let him chip just to get this young man some confidence. And I'm not going to blame the whole game plan on the lack of game plan and the loss on this young man at left tackle. But as a quarterback, with your blind side not taken care of like you're used to, right? Because their starter, Tyron Smith, is one of the best left tackles in the league. It's hard to replace that. And not game planning for that is embarrassing. And they embarrassed that young man.
Well, let's then take big picture. Let's step back from week five, because then here is the argument. If you shut down the Dallas running game, not just like Green Bay did this past weekend, but if you do that, or you're playing a defense that has the ability to slow the running game down, which, by the way, was the argument to pay Ezekiel Elliott, was this contract situation with Zeke is different than Melvin Gordon's that he had with the Chargers. It was different than Le'Veon Bell's because the offense ran through Ezekiel Elliott, and the Cowboys are going to win with running the ball. So now you can't change the narrative. And I'm not saying you are. I'm just saying you can't. Now that Zeke's got his contract, you can't say, well, you need to pay Dak Prescott because he's your starting quarterback. You can only use that argument once. But to the point of, if he is not having this success against decent defenses, isn't all you want is a quarterback that can take advantage of a team trying to stop the run and putting eight guys in the box? And Dak's numbers may not reflect that, which to me then tells me as a Dallas Cowboys fan, maybe we're going down the same road as the Tony Romo situation. Maybe we're in that scenario where we have a quarterback that can only take us so far. Why would we want to go down that road again, knowing what we know, not getting a Super Bowl the most recent time this has happened? But I think those are the questions that the Cowboys fans have.
They do have those questions, and they're right. But when you look at the landscape of quarterbacks and available quarterbacks and young quarterbacks in the draft coming up, what are your options? Think about that. Okay, you got Dak. You don't do anything at all this year for Dak. You got him another year because you can franchise tag him, right? He'll make upwards of probably around, what, $26, $27 million in 1 year next year if you franchise tag him. Then what do you do? Right? Where do you go then? So you have to come to grips because the price – the market for quarterbacks is only going up, right? So as a you gave Zeke $90 million in a league that's devaluing running backs, but yet you're holding out on a quarterback that has won a division twice, got you to the playoffs 3 out of 4 years he started. So I don't understand what. What is the benchmark? What are you looking for him to do?
I think that Jerry Jones has made up his mind regardless. I think they're going to pay Dak Prescott. It's just a matter of
they have to.
Yeah, of the game of chicken, of who is going to fold first or who is going to accept.
Well, we saw he doesn't play chicken well, right? we saw that when he redid Zeke's deal with 2 years left on the deal. We saw him not do that well. So do you have confidence that he's gonna be able to play hardball with Dak Prescott in terms of negotiation?
You know what I thought, Ephraim, and I'll be honest with this, was I've always thought that the question was not do you pay Dak, say, $35 million a year, or do you pay him $30 million a year? And come to find out, I may be the only one in the minority, because the real decision is, do you pay him $35 million a year, or do you not pay him at all? And when you look at these stats, if you're a Cowboys fan, to not go down that road again, that's the decision. It's not getting Dak Prescott on the cheap. It's, is Dak Prescott the guy to lead the Cowboys? And that's what's so scary about the numbers that we mentioned. Can he lead them to the place where they want to go, and that's a Super Bowl?
Well, prior to the season starting, that was the expectation, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why the urgency to get Ezekiel Elliott's deal done was, we have a Super Bowl team. Now, all of a sudden, you don't have a Super Bowl team, or you don't have a quarterback that can get you to the Super Bowl in week 5? Like, I don't get it. There's some other issues outside of the quarterback that they need to deal with. So I don't understand how you're going to dump all of this on him.
They have to stop the run.
Right.
You know, Aaron Jones with 4 touchdowns.
Like, defensively, what you do defensively and your ability to stop the run and stop teams from scoring has nothing to do with Dak Prescott. So what are we talking about here, right? Now all of a sudden, because there have been some bumps in the road, Dak Prescott isn't the guy to take you to the promised land. The defense definitely is not going to get you to the promised land. I can promise you that.
Remember when he hit these bumps when Tony Romo was driving this bus? Boy, this sounds familiar.
Yeah, but
it feels familiar.
Yeah. You couldn't tell Jerry Jones that. Tony Romo was an adopted son of Jerry Jones. Mm-hmm. I mean, he loved, and we have sound bites and clips of him just over the moon in love with Tony Romo, as an owner should be with his quarterback.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We'll be talking some football with our good friend Charles Davis of the NFL on Fox. As I guess he's sandwiched in the middle of Vikings games at the Vikings last week against the Giants. Got him again this week with a showdown against the Philadelphia Eagles in one of the marquee games in Week 6. Charles Davis joins us here on Fox Sports Radio. Hey, Charles, how are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Great.
Let's talk some Vikings, because you had them last week after, I'll just call it Stephon Diggsgate. That's just probably the easiest way to put it. They leave with a victory, and now you get them going up against Philadelphia. But what was the sense of the team with everything that went down, with his status going into that Giants game? Were the Vikings in a fragile state entering Week 5?
I wouldn't say fragile, but I would say realistic. And I was actually appreciative of them and how they handled things when we talked, because you guys know, you've been around it, you played it. A lot of times you get the houses burning down and everybody's like, nope, all is well. All of a sudden we've got Saddam Hussein's, publicist saying, nope, we're winning this battle. And, the United States going right through, downtown Baghdad. So not in this case. The team acknowledged it. Every player we talked to, they acknowledged, yeah, it's not exactly right, but this is the NFL. Turmoil happens. We should be able to handle it, and we'll get right. And they had the perfect opponent last week. They had the Giants. And the Giants were playing better. Things were feeling better. Rookie quarterback was playing well. They got Washington the week before, which right now everyone's trying to schedule. And everyone felt good. But if the Vikings put their game together, the expected outcome was that they would win decisively, and they did. But the best part was Kirk Cousins, forget the idea that he had to apologize to Adam Thielen, and then he threw him a lot of footballs on Sunday. So the best part was that he took the shots when he had them. He didn't just take the risk-averse throws. He actually took some of those shots downfield and to the sidelines where you go, ooh, now that's a nice throw. It fit it in there.
So for me, when I'm watching the Minnesota Vikings this year, having a healthy Dalvin Cook, knowing Gary Kubiak, who's an advisor there, and what he wants to do with the football. I played under Gary in Denver and in Houston for 7-8 of the 13 years I was in the league. It's no shock to me that they're running the ball the way they are. This team is now built on the running game. Previous years, Adam Thielen, Stephon Diggs, these guys, they would get a bunch of balls. Now it's not that way. When you look at Dalvin Cook, and he has 92 attempts at 542 yards, and he's at almost 6 yards a carry. Why would you be throwing the ball that much anyway?
Yeah, it's a great point, and let me just throw on top of that, Gary Kubiak matched up perfectly with Mike Zimmer, which is why Mike wanted to bring him on. He named a new offense coordinator, Kevin Stefanski. This is his first time as a coordinator. So you bring in Gary Kubiak, who's had some health issues, as you guys know, probably didn't want to be a full-time guy again, meaning like the guy right in the fire, but as a consultant, advisor-type role, help put things in. He and Stefanski and Gary's son, Clint, had a tremendous relationship prior. I think that excited Gary without having to be the primary guy. And Mike Zimmer, after last year, and you guys remember, he fired John DeFilippo because that wasn't matching up with him well at all. And Zim is, the Zim oath is, first do no harm to my defense. So run the darn football and keep me out of bad situations. So that matched up perfectly. Zim was determined to run it. That's what Gary Kubiak does really well. Kevin Stefanski is a first-time coordinator who's not stupid. Did my head coach say run the football? We're going to run the football. And you have a Dalvin Cook who is dynamic, absolutely dynamic. He and Christian McCaffrey right now, we can talk about devaluing the running back position. Those two are not devaluing anything. Those two have been a lot of fun to watch in early going.
Charles Davis, NFL on Fox analyst, joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. He's Ephraim Salaam. I'm Dan Beyer, sitting in for Doug Gottlieb here on the Doug Gottlieb Show. The Daniel Jones project for the Giants, I think, is gone better than many expected, especially on draft day. But was there any concern with some of the injuries that this team is dealing with, not having the players on the field with Daniel Jones as he embarks on his career, Charles?
Yeah, there's always a concern about that. But I would say you know, the biggest concern is who do you have in front of him trying to keep him upright? Because, yeah, if you're concerned that he doesn't have the weapons to throw to, hand to, all that, totally get it. I mean, that makes perfect sense. But right now in his development, part of your development as a young quarterback is learn how to operate, you know, in some adverse situations. But let's not have him operate without people in front who are trying to keep him, you know, healthy. And that offensive line, look, it's not the greatest offensive line in the league, but it's light years ahead of where they were last year. And they stayed virtually intact this season. So go to work, young man. You know, this week, again, you don't have Saquon Barkley because I saw already that they've declared him out. They've declared Sterling Shepard, his number one receiver, out. They've declared Evan Ingram, one of the top tight ends in the league as a youngster, out. That's a lot that you're dealing with right out of the gate. And Wayne Gallman, the number two runner, probably out. So you got a lot going on, but thank goodness the offensive line's still intact. Now he's got to learn how to maneuver, and boy, what an education he gets now, because New England, not only are they great, but they've been great on defense since the Super Bowl last year. They are playing defense at a historic level and probably not getting enough credit for it.
Yeah, and with that task coming up for Daniel Jones tomorrow, basically, what would you say, or what advice would you give to this young man going against the top defense in the league, going against Bill Belichick, who does not lose to rookie quarterbacks, and not having those offensive weapons that really make the difference for this young offense?
Yeah, I'm going to play to the strength of why I drafted Daniel Jones. I drafted him for his poise. I drafted him for his confidence. I drafted him for his decisiveness. I drafted him for his legs, where he can get out of the pocket and either extend plays or make plays running the ball downfield. I drafted for all of those things because he needs every bit of that in this game. Remember, Pat Shurmur is the head coach and offensive play caller. He and Daniel Jones are going to have to somehow fashion a run look in this game, because I'm not going to say a running game, because you're talking about John Hillman, an undrafted free agent out of Boston College / Rutgers. You're talking about Eli Perry, who's truly a fullback who got some carries last week. Those are your primary ball carriers. So here's where Golden Tate's second game back becomes big. His yards after catch, well, in Detroit, they used him in the backfield some. Swing it out to him, get it to him, you know, jet sweeps, all those types of things. You've got to come up with different ways to make it look like a running game. Quick screens, right, quick swings, all of those things to help out your young QB. But at the same time, play with some courage, kid. Play with some boldness, because no one expects anything otherwise. Let's take a few shots at these guys and see if maybe we can create some big plays. And I think that's where Daniel Jones' is poise comes into play. Because, guys, Minnesota threw the kitchen sink at him in terms of looks and coverages and where guys were coming from. Never saw him get ruffled or rattled. Did he have the best day? No, but that's not all his fault. But you didn't see him come apart. You didn't see him come unglued. And he'll need every bit of that Thursday night.
We'll see if the Patriots throw the entire house at Daniel Jones coming up tomorrow.
I think they may throw the entire substance.
All right, Charles, before I let you go, I got to ask you this. You're a native of Elizabethton, Tennessee, population 14,000, right? About?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I'm asking all the guests this today. Charles is one of the notable people on Wikipedia from the notable people from his town. Can you name someone else that is also a notable person from Elizabethton, Tennessee, that made the Wikipedia list?
I certainly can. He plays tight end for the Dallas Cowboys, and his grandfather was the coach at Elizabethton High School, the home of the Cyclones. Coach Ryder, who was there for forever, and he was the legendary guy in town. And Jason, I believe, played for his grandfather in high school. I was born in Carter County. I was born in Carter County Hospital, which is right there. And I was born at the old one. I think Jason was at the new one. So we're both Betsy boys.
We would have taken Jason Witten, which is your answer. That is correct. So a round of applause to Charles Davis. Also, Paul Edward Anderson, 1956 Olympic gold medalist in wrestling from Charles Davis's hometown.
Yeah. What weight class?
I don't know. Wikipedia doesn't say. Maybe I'll have to click on
it.
It's
was he Greco-Roman or was
he? You know what? He was 360 pounds, 5'10", 360. Good also Lord. A weightlifter. Yes.
So I'm guessing then he was a heavyweight.
Yeah.
You know, they ended up having to change all of that. Do you guys remember a wrestler by the name of Pat Thacker, North Carolina State? he was monstrous. Like, he was probably close to 400 pounds. And no one beat him forever and ever. And they changed the weight classification after that, where I think your limit was like 275 or something. So. There always comes changes when people become dominated in areas. So.
There's heavyweights, and then there's heavyweights.
And then there's those guys.
Yeah. Charles, we appreciate it. We'll be watching you on Sunday. Eagles and Vikings should be one of the best games of Week 6. We'll do it again soon.
Look forward to it. Thanks, guys. You take care.
Thanks, E.D.
Charles Davis at CFD22 on Twitter. Again, see him on Sunday's call of the Eagles and Vikings.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
You can find our next guest on Twitter at Move the Sticks, and here is Move the Sticks podcast with Bucky Brooks, who you can, by the way, hear on Fox Sports Radio on Saturdays, NFL Network analyst and the color analyst for the Chargers Radio Network. Daniel Jeremiah joins us here on Fox Sports Radio. Hey, Daniel, good to talk to you. How are you?
Doing great. What's going on, guys?
How you doing, man?
Let's dive in, because things aren't going great for those Chargers, the team that you see week in and week out. The news today, Mike Pouncey on injured reserve. But even before the Pouncey injury, there didn't seem to be a carryover from last year's late season success to what they did early on this season. Where was the disconnect? What was missing? What is missing right now with the Chargers to have them off to their, somewhat uninspiring start to start this season?
Yeah, you know, look, they've had issues down in the red zone with some red zone turnovers, but I mean, if I just want to point out the obvious, your best defensive player is Derwin James, who's an absolute freak, and you don't have him all season long. You're missing your Pro Bowl left tackle. Your Pro Bowl running back just came back. You've been on your third kicker. The list goes on and on and on of all the guys. Hunter Henry is one of the best young in the NFL, hasn't really been out there. Mike Williams has been in and out of the lineup. It's just, I've never seen this injuries on one team. And that being said, they've been in all these games. They just haven't been able to finish. So I think you look at the goal for this team right now, it's just if you can get to about 500, 4-4, and then all these dudes, a bunch of these dudes start coming back, you try and just see if you can sneak into the tournament.
Well, isn't this, per usual for the Chargers over the past few years? We've had a bunch of injuries at the skill position for them, normally at the wide receiver position. But then they'll start slow, and then you'll look up around week 7-8, and they're hitting their stride. They're starting to put things together. Is that what you see this year for the Chargers?
Yeah, it's been similar. It's been similar to that. I mean, you had a lot of 1-2 type starts the last handful of years, and you go back 2 years ago. I believe they started out 0-4. They ended up 9-7. So they do get better. As you get to the middle and the latter portion of the season, this team starts to gel. But the key is you can't fall out of the race during that period of time. And you have a game against Detroit. You just should have won on the road, and that one gets away. I thought last week Denver, although it's a much more talented team than their record, it's one that you got to win. So they've got to find a way to get back on track this week against Pittsburgh, and coming in with a third string quarterback, they're going to come out there and try and run the heck out of the ball.
Daniel Jeremiah joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. He's Ephraim Salam. I'm Dan Beyer. Where does Pittsburgh go from here? Speaking of the Steelers, Devlin Hodges going to get that start on Sunday night. It seemed to be okay when you play the Bengals, but then you play the Ravens, and they put up quite a fight even when Mason Rudolph was knocked out. But where does Mike Tomlin and the Steelers team go with Hodges starting on Sunday night?
Well, I think that if you look at having your third string quarterback, and then you look at the teams that have beat the Chargers, they've really run the ball against them. And Denver came out with Philip Lindsay last week and ran down their throats. So I would be shocked if Devlin Hodges is throwing the ball more than 25, 30 times in this game. I wouldn't be surprised to see some wildcat stuff with Jalen Samuels. We saw a little bit of that last week. And Pittsburgh's defense, Devin Bush was the perfect player for them and exactly what they needed. They just haven't been able to replace Ryan Shazier over the last couple of years. And I think his impact there on the defense helps them out. Their linebackers just haven't been able to run and cover. So he helps them there. And I think that if you're the Steelers, you got to say, we got to win this game up front on both sides.
Going back to your scouting days, when you looking at players, you got both of the Bosa brothers playing at a high level, right? for your money, who are you taking first? You're taking Nick or are you taking Joey?
Well, I got to see Nick. I got to see Joey every week. So, and Joey's a pretty big dude. So I'm not. I'm gonna stay with Joey on that one for personal reasons. I mean, I don't know if you can go wrong. I would say that Nick is the best leverage rusher that I maybe have ever evaluated. You know, coming off the edge, it's Ephraim. You could probably go back and think about some of the guys you were around. I used to be around a guy, Trent Cole, with the Eagles when I was there, who was a real good leverage rusher. But this dude's got just so much power and just gets underneath everybody. You know, Freeney would do it at times and then build everything off that. But he was still probably a little bit more of a speed guy. I mean, Nick Bosa is going to go right through your chest.
If Cliff Kingsbury isn't the head coach of Arizona, does Bosa go number one last spring?
I think there's a very real chance, and that's one of the – to me, I think that – I tweeted that out the other day. It's going to be a fascinating sports talk discussion about 4 years from now. Let's assume Josh Rosen gets someplace where they actually have some players, which he has not been afforded that luxury thus far in his career. But if he ends up, selling down somewhere and being a solid quarterback, not even a great quarterback, but just a solid starting quarterback, and Nick Bosa does what he does, you're going to have that great debate. Was it smart to punt on Rosen – And really, nobody talked about the fact you cost yourself the opportunity with Nick Bosa. So what combination of players will be better when we look back on this a couple years from now?
Yeah, and speaking of Rosen, he's been named the starter for the rest of the season in Miami.
My condolences.
Right. The sentiment is he's just a placeholder for them to get the top pick in the draft, which is they're headed toward immediately. Yeah. For this young man to really be able to develop in the NFL, where's a landing spot that you think that would be conducive for him to grow?
Well, I've kicked around the idea of even the Chargers, just, finding a place where they've got a veteran quarterback. He could sit for a year or two and then be given that opportunity. It all changes year to year. I would keep an eye on a place like, we'll see what happens with Tennessee. Marcus Mariota, how does he finish up this year? I know they've got Tannehill there, but that's one place I think I'd keep an eye on. If I'm him, and he does end up getting shopped, I'm going, hey, ideally I'd like to have a place where I've got protection, playmakers, and a good play caller, because I don't know that he's had any of those three in his first two spots. So anywhere he goes, it's going to be an upgrade.
Daniel Jeremiah joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. Of course, you can see him on the NFL Network. You can hear him on the Move the podcast with Bucky, Move the Sticks podcast with Bucky Brooks. Dabo Swinney, Clemson head coach, going to be the guy's guest as the podcast, this week's podcast launches tomorrow. Talking about young quarterbacks, what can Washington do now with Jay Gruden out of the picture to give any help, benefit, to make the rookie season of Dwayne Haskins a little bit easier than it has been in these first 5 weeks?
Well, it's fascinating, with Bill Callahan's press conference the other day, when they asked him about who's going to play, and he didn't even mention Dwayne's name. He talked about Keenum and Colt McCoy, and he had to be asked about Dwayne. So that, to me, doesn't sound like it's really on the front burner. For me, gosh, I would feel like it's a completely wasted season if you don't put together an offense that Dwayne Haskins can be competitive in for at least 6 to 8 games. I mean, wherever they are these next couple weeks, Dwayne Haskins has to play this year because they're going to be in the same situation Arizona was in. Going back into the draft next year and not necessarily knowing what you have at the quarterback position when you're in a position to draft another one. So, man, I sure hope this kid's a smart kid. And I talked to teams that met with him before the draft last year. They said he was impressive on the board. Maybe he can't swallow this entire offense as it is, but just give him enough. Put a game plan together. Let's get him on the field here before too long so we can see if he can play.
Ephraim and I have talked about this before, but do you think Jay Gruden was trying to prove a point when they put him into that Giants game?
I don't know. It's hard to get inside his head on that one. I mean, I would sure hope you don't want to put anybody in a position to fail. Gosh, that'd be an awful, awful thing to do. I think, look, Dwayne has to – he has to have some, he has to have some responsibility for the way he played in that game. Even as a young player, he made some poor decisions. But that was a situation that was never going to work, and it seemed to be from the outside to be pretty toxic. So maybe just Jay Gruden moving on, it will see a little bit better atmosphere there in that building.
Yeah, and what we've seen lately is offensive coordinators and coaches changing or altering their offenses to match the talent of the actual quarterback. And in my opinion, Washington hasn't done that. They weren't going to do that under Jay Gruden. Do you think that's something that they can do now if they decide to go with Dwayne, put him in positions, as you said, like put him in positions to really hone in on his strengths and try to keep him away from those harmful throws?
I think it's not rocket science, right?
I mean,
like this shouldn't be that hard to pare some things down, find some core philosophies that he executed very well at Ohio State and incorporate that into what you're doing. There's only so many plays. So, to me, that's from one of the things that frustrates me is that, you always hear, well, we can't get him out there. He's not ready. Well, make him ready. Let's get this thing that he can be comfortable with and give him a package of plays and let's go. I've never really understood that. I think that should be very attainable.
He's Daniel Jeremiah of the NFL Network, the Move the Sticks podcast. The new one this week launches tomorrow with Dabo Swinney, Daniel Jeremiah, and Bucky Brooks teaming up on that. Find him on Twitter at Move the Sticks, and you can hear him on the Chargers Radio Network doing color commentary right next to Matt Money Smith. Daniel, we appreciate it. We know you do it every week. This week, no different. Thanks so much for the time. We'll do it again next week.
I always enjoy listening to you guys. Have a great one.
Thanks, bud.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
The Cleveland Browns are 2-3 right now to start the season, where many people had high hopes. They're a game back of the Baltimore Ravens for first in the AFC North. And despite being embarrassed on national TV, I don't know if they were embarrassed by the Rams, but it's the second time in 3 weeks that they've lost a national, a primetime game on TV in front of a national audience. You lost to the Rams in week 3. Now you drop one to the Niners in week 5. With all of that being said, with the questions about Odell Beckham Jr., questions about Baker Mayfield, maybe the questions about the Browns defense, I think that there is some hope for the Cleveland Browns. Here's Browns head coach Freddie Kitchens on, the Browns being right now A-OK.
I don't think we had anybody give up or anything like that. No, I thought we were still fighting. Contrary to popular belief, we had our chances, and we didn't do it. Everybody will recognize that. In the building, the people that matter are the ones that will recognize it, and we'll move on, we'll get better. We've got a lot of guys in situations that they've never been in. We're not panicking. We're going to line up and play the next game. There's 11 more.
And realistically, he's right. Considering the way that division has fallen, things aren't out of reach for the Cleveland Browns. They may not be vying for AFC supremacy, but the AFC North is still well within reach, and we're only 5 weeks into the season.
It's right there. I mean, it's up in the air between them and Baltimore. You look at Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, they're pretty much done.
Yeah. Take away 50% of the division right now.
Right, so now it's a two-team race, and you've already beaten that team once.
On the road.
So you can still control your own destiny. It's not a pull-the-cord, bail-out situation. It's a we have to right the ship. We have to get it together. Of course, week 1, when we saw them lose to the Tennessee Titans, and they had 18 penalties and personal foul penalties and unnecessary roughness, all of that undisciplined type of behavior. Then they come back, they get right against the Jets, and then they lose a tough one against the Rams, blow out the Ravens, and get demolished by the 49ers. That's too much up and down, right? There's no consistency there. There's no identity there. And teams that don't have an identity, you see those ebbs and flows. Right? Not little ripples. These are mountains and peaks. Right? You don't blow a team out, then come back and get blown out. Blow a team out. Like, that's just, they don't know who they are yet. What team are they? Is Baker Mayfield throwing the ball 40 times? Are we handing the ball off to our running backs 40 times? What are we going to do? Defensively, are we going to play sound defense, or are we going to hurt ourselves with penalties after penalties? There's a little bit of a lack of discipline on that side of the ball, and then it's a lot of egos and a lot of talent on the offensive side of the ball. Who gets involved, right? Is OBJ the guy? Where are we going with this?
That's the issue that with Cleveland is, if OBJ ends up being OBJ again, does it come at the deficiencies of what Jarvis Landry would get or what Nick Chubb would get? And to your point, that's what's all being worked out right now. All right, how does this, like, on paper, it looks great. It really looks great. It's just now, how does this translate? And outside of what they've got the next 2 weeks, which is the Seahawks coming to town and then at New England, you just mentioned it. There is a game against the Bills, but you have to play the Steelers twice. You get the Bengals twice. You have the Arizona Cardinals on your schedule. You have the Miami Dolphins on your schedule. Like, these are the Denver Broncos on there. These are the matchups that face the Cleveland Browns. And when you're only a game back of the Baltimore Ravens in what is a two-team race in that division, and you have that win over the team, I'd agree with Freddie Kitchens. It's just Cleveland needs to figure it out. And you know what? I give them the benefit of the doubt. We're not crowning Super Bowl champions in week five, but it's just trying to figure out what identity they are, because I think, Ephraim, so many people thought it was just going to be OBJ is going to be catching one-handed touchdown catches, Jarvis Landry is going to be moving the chains, Baker's going to be doing his thing, and the Browns are going to be back in the playoffs, and that's not how it's going to work. I don't even think that's even a viable plan for how things would get done with the Browns.
No, it's not, and when you have that much talent offensively, and oh, by the way, Kareem Hunt's going to be back in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
So there's another piece to the puzzle. You know, sometimes you can have too much. Too much of a good thing is like, you know, you can have a chocolate addiction. You love chocolate, but you can't eat chocolate all day long, right? Can't eat candy, can't eat sweets. They're pretty sweet over there on the offense, right? They got a lot of weapons. So who do you service? Do you service the running game, which they should, or do you service the egos of your wide receivers, right? Because we know how volatile that can be if things aren't conducive, right? So now Freddie Kitchens has to do a good job of reining this in. This is who we are. If we're a run-first team, let's be a run-first team and live off the play action, right? Baker, we want you between 28, 35 passes a game.
That's right.
That's where we're going to live. And OBJ, Jarvis Landry, both of you guys aren't going to be able to get off every game. One weekend maybe you, one weekend maybe OBJ. Like, so you that has to be an understanding. And wherever the coverage allows you to take advantage of a secondary, then that's who you go to.